Ladies and gentlemen, from the heart of the Heartland, it's time for Keeping It 99.
Welcome to Keeping It 99, your one-stop shop podcast for everything in the world of heavy metal, rock and roll, Northeast Ohio. Anything else kind of rhymes with that? Oreos?
Rhymes with Northeast Ohio.
Oreos? What?
What rhymes with Northeast Ohio?
SpaghettiO. There we go.
It does.
SpaghettiOs?
Yeah. All right.
They suck.
Welcome to
They're fucking delicious.
Like legit SpaghettiOs
straight
or the knockoff Aldi's SpaghettiOs?
Knockoff Aldi's ones are good too. I don't care. I'll eat all that shit straight from the can. I haven't eaten SpaghettiOs like in a bowl, warm, ever.
Yeah. I used to love them. I think college broke me.
With the SpaghettiOs, you were like,
yeah,
no more.
I can't. Like, I tried like a couple years ago. I'm like, I'm gonna have some SpaghettiOs for lunch. Nope.
You're still fucking delicious to me, thank God.
My name is Eagle.
Yeah, you are.
And I'm joined by the birthday boy. The one, the only, everybody's favorite, happy birthday, Rubber City Redbeard.
Birthday City Redbeard.
And if you hear a voice.
Ooh, a third.
Oh my God. Oh. It's so crazy. Like at the beginning of the show, like when we first started, we didn't have any friends to come on the podcast.
No.
And now we have a plethora. And we are very, very lucky to be joined today by Jason. How do you pronounce it?
It's Luchka, right?
Luchka?
That sounds good.
How do you pronounce it?
So, growing up, we always said Luchka.
Luchka.
But the fact is, nobody remembers the proper Ukrainian pronunciation.
But that, everybody's that's dead. What it is Ukraine? But,
yeah, growing up, it was always Luchka.
We are here with Jason Luchka.
Yeah. I was going to go with that because...
I've had Lucia, Luka, Luchka...
It's all the same. Karate-ish.
I know, like, how do you get Lucia out of that?
But Lucia.
My middle school art teacher. I was Jason Lucia.
That's why he's an artist.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's trying to be fancy with
fucking fancy right. Art. You are in Super Corruptor.
Yep.
Death Crawl.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
What am I missing?
Oh, that's the only active bands.
Boom! Yeah. Death Crawl, Super Corruptor. We've played Super Corruptor on the show. Today we're going to be playing some Death Crawl and some Super Corruptor.
We appreciate it.
In honor of you.
Oh, thank you.
Our guest, double shot. Thank you for coming in.
Right on.
To the show.
And you're like a pro. You're like a pro at this. We're just two fat guys who hang out every now and then and talk into a microphone. But you, sir, back in the day.
Oh, I've got stories about that. It'll question my pro credentials.
Oh, shit. You worked at 88.9 V-Rock, a radio station that we've discussed on this show many a times.
Yes.
It was a huge influence back in the 90s on the local heavy metal scene. You know, it was your go-to when it came to finding bands like NDE or even Mushroom Head. If you
wanted to hear local metal, that was the shot. If you were in a local band and you wanted people to hear your shit, that was the shot. Like, fucking 88.9 was where it was at for any metalhead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, if you listened to metal, especially back then, that's where you got your fix.
And it wasn't even just local stuff. I mean,
you guys were playing Pantera. You guys were playing, like, that's where you can go find your White Zombie or Pantera. Yep. At a time, I remember in the 90s laughing at the idea of Pantera being on the radio, and now I can't turn on the radio without hearing Pantera, which is pretty hilarious to me. Cold Chamber. Yep. That's where I discovered Cold Chamber, probably thanks to you.
Unfortunately, yes.
Nice guys.
Yeah. Dez is a sweetheart. Nice. I literally ran into Dez one time outside of a bathroom at the Nautica, and I knocked him back like 5 feet, and he looked at me and gave me the devil horns, like just smiled, and was like, ugh, and I was like, what the fuck just happened?
That Devil Driver?
Devil Driver, okay. Yeah.
He's a little dude.
He's a tiny man.
The first time I met him would have been Ozfest 98, and I finagled some backstage passes because there was a DJ at Ozfest 98 that was coming out and like introducing all the bands and talking in between sets and stuff. He was like Ozzy Osbourne's personal DJ dude that he brought on tour with him. And the night before the show, all the crew guys, including that guy, went to a strip club. Where I happened to know one of the dancers who it was her first night dancing, right? So she ends up dancing for this DJ dude. Halfway through her first song ever dancing, she breaks down crying because she's so ashamed and embarrassed. She takes off running, and he was like, oh my God, I'm in love with this chick. Fast forward to the next day, we show up at the show. I'm with this chick, and she's like, oh my God, that's the guy that I danced for last night, and he was so nice, and I cried and ran away, and I was like, hold the fuck on. And I ran up to the front of the stage, and he's coming off the side of the stage, and I'm just fucking screaming bloody murder after this dude, like trying to get him to come over. Finally does, and I tell him, like, hey, that stripper last night that cried and ran away, and he was like, yes. I was like, she's with me, and he was like, hold on. He went and got three passes and came and hooked us up with passes, so I ended up meeting Dez that day, and I was like, you know, you guys are so cool, man, and you're awesome, don't ever change, man, you guys are cool, and he was like, oh, we won't, you know, just keep writing, and then they came out with a shitty album next, and I was like, you didn't listen to me at all!
Yeah, that second album was that was garbage.
What was it, Garden something? Eden something?
No, it was like Songs for My Son or some shit. Like, he wrote a song for his kid just like, I'm gonna miss you when I'm on the road. Daddy's gonna miss you.
It was bad.
It was pretty terrible. He did that duet too with Ozzy, I think. They did the Shock the Monkey, the fucking Peter Gabriel cover.
Yeah, that's right.
I reminded him that day, like, hey, the first time I seen you guys was here in Akron at a club called Ron's Crossroads. And he was like, dude, fuck that place. They almost killed my fucking drummer. And I was like, what? And so what's his name? Bug? Was that the drummer's name?
Yeah, I'm sure.
It was something like that, right?
It's a cool nickname, right?
So Crossroads, like, if you guys remember Crossroads and the Voodoo, it was never a different setup when it was the Voodoo. So if you remember the Voodoo, it was the same thing as Crossroads. And there was just no airflow in there. And that show in particular, NDE played that show with Cold Chamber, and it was oversold, easy, packed, and just hot as fuck. Dude didn't have any water, didn't have a fan on him when he was playing, and ended up almost like slipping into a coma and had to fucking go to a hospital and have like IV fluids put in him and shit. Like, they literally almost killed their drummer for that show. But they were super nice. Even like his drummer almost died, and he was still such a fucking nice guy.
Right.
So how did that come? How old were you when you worked at V-Rock?
Yeah. So I was DJ in spring of 96, and then they always pick the next crew for the next year, right? So Bob knew me, Bob Long. He knew me because my brother worked for 91.5 V-Rock, I think, before the frequency change. So he knew that I was a nerd, that I'd probably do really good at, you know, running a station.
Yeah.
He said, hey, do you want to be program director? And I said, well, what does that mean? He said, well, you get to... you know, help pick the music, help make the playlist, do all the reporting to all the magazines and whatever. And then say, wow, yeah, that sounds
basically
cool.
Like the dude.
Right. And my buddy Brian Thomas, he was going to be music director. And we were like, you know, peas in a pod, peas and carrots, whatever you want to say back then. So it was like, yeah, this is going to be sweet. So it just kind of started with shadowing the then program director, who was Jeff Berezny. And, you know, like, okay, these are the promotion companies that are going to talk to you. These three contacts are really good. They'll hook you up with CDs and concert tickets and interviews and whatever. These people are real flaky, you know, just like the lay of the land.
Mm-hmm.
And then, boom, here's 50 CDs. Listen to them all in the next 3 days.
Oh, do your homework.
And tell me which songs we're adding to the playlist this week. And like, that's one thing that was really cool about that station is that because you were changing program director and music director every year sort of took on a different personality, right?
Right.
So Berezny was really heavy into industrial stuff and like gothic and cold wave and stuff like that. So he would always be playing like or pushing for Skinny Puppy and
Nine Inch Nails.
Fracture, Nine Inch Nails, yeah, right. Ministry. It's Front 242. You know, and then switching into me. I was kind of in the same wavelength at that point. A lot of like heavy industrial, like White Zombie and Ministry, a lot of Ministry back then. But yeah, so it was like, boom, here's this huge stack of CDs. And you're like, okay, let's listen to this one. Oh, this is really bad. Okay, put it in the suck pile, you know?
You had a suck pile.
And like, wow, this is really good. Okay, making notes. And you had to study every dang song you listened to make sure there was no swearing or I should say obvious swearing, because if it's death metal, you're not going to tell anyway.
Right.
But, you know, like, okay, I have to be a censor. I also have to be, like, a content judge. But there was no limit to what you could put in the computer. So, like, a today. I don't know what their playlist is. Let's say it's 200 songs. We had like 7,000 songs in our playlist.
Holy shit.
And that's why you had deep cuts, right?
Right.
It wasn't just, hey, here's the two Pantera songs we play. It's, hey, here's 12. Or, you know, here's this entire Deftones record that's edited. Every single track is clean. You can play it from track one to the end. Boom. They're all on the computer. They're all ready to go.
That's awesome.
So a lot of that was challenging to sit through.
Oh, I'm sure.
There was some real bad music. But generally speaking, like, the local stuff always got at least one song in. Like, yeah. If it was a good-sounding, like, recording,
mm-hmm.
It was like, all right, you know what? Let's support the local guys. I mean, this is how naive I was, right? I didn't even realize that outside of NDE there were really local heavy bands. Because Chris Longo lived two houses down from me.
Oh, right on.
Oh, like, shit. Cool. So it was kind of was it like a nepotism thing? You're like, you're my boy. I'm gonna hook falling up.
Well, yeah, so Chris hung out with my brother because he was two years older than my brother, who's 4 years older than me. But, yeah, so Chris kind of started V-Rock, if you didn't know that. He had like a Crazy Chris show on Friday nights.
Longo did?
Yeah.
What?
Pretty much. From what I recall.
Crazy Chris.
Going back, yeah, going back like 20-some years. But, you know, he'd play like Ozzy and some of the heavier Hendrix Experience stuff because the format at that time was just classic rock.
Right.
So Chris's show, he like convinced Bob, like, let me play some edgier, quote-unquote, stuff, right? And people loved it, you know? And then, like, Chris and, like, Kevin Correo and some other people, I'm going to forget their names, like, they actually set the wheels in motion and said, let's try this. Let's be an all-metal format, like, high school radio station, as ridiculous as that is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they did it. And
it fucking worked.
Yeah, and like it started off small. 91.5 had, I forget how many watts, but eventually they got a more powerful transmitter, and the frequency change to coincide with that, and then boom, all of a sudden you can reach to, what, Nelson and Points East, all the way out west and down south and up into Cleveland on good days. Huge footprint.
Yeah.
And you do a radio show and you'd get requests from all over the place.
I was one of those kids that was always calling up.
Oh, making, I always called him, yeah.
Making requests. Because I remember, I think it was 96, and my friend Brian, he came over and he was so fucking excited. And he was like, we got to go in my car and listen to 88.9 right now. And I was just like, is there like a guest on something? And he's like, no. And we got into his car. We couldn't get anything. We had to drive up the block, found a spot where we can actually listen. And he parked the car in front of somebody's house. And fucking like, Clutch was moving. On. It was the first time I ever heard Clutch. And Clutch was on. And I was like, what's going on? And he goes, they're playing. There's a heavy metal radio station. And I was just like, what? And it went from like Clutch to Propane. And from that moment on, I was just like, holy shit, because for people listening, like, nowadays, like, you can get your music at any time. My phone, fucking, I listen to my phone in my car on the way here, listening to whatever you want. You have all kinds of access to that kind of stuff, but back then,
Back in 96, it was, you either bought the fucking tape or the CD, or you caught it on the radio if they played your shit on the radio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and on the radio, you were just force-fed the exact same fucking bands all the time.
Same songs, you know, with you guys, you're saying there was like 7,000 songs on your fucking playlist and shit, as to where like an actual radio station. And I don't want to say that like actual radio station, like you guys weren't real,
like a bigger,
but like an
commercial radio station.
Yeah,
commercial radio.
They only play what's gonna sell. They only do what's gonna make them money and benefit them. As to where you guys were just fucking playing everything that you liked that was in your ears.
Right.
That's fucking amazing.
Yeah, and the cool thing was, the tedious part of my job, Brian would screen stuff, I'd screen stuff. You'd say, okay, these are the tracks we're going to play. So then you had to enter it into a computer system, like this real basic green screen kind of...
DOS.
It looked a lot like DOS, but it was a little better than that, right? Like, okay, these are the tracks you're allowed to play. You had to type in the song titles, type in the album name, the artist, any special notes you wanted to put into like the log, right? And it's like, if you remember listening back, DJs would always say the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, hey, there's a new record coming out. Like, that kind of crap printed out in the playlist every week. because it was somebody actually typed all that garbage in. And like nowadays, like all their shows are pre-recorded. Like the students do them.
Like ahead of time?
Yeah, and like, they don't even play the music. They just like go in and they're like, okay, hey, just and then they slot all their like breaks in like an MP3 file, basically like a playlist.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's not even like live radio anymore.
That's pretty much how they do it, like MMS and those places, too. Just,
that's kind of how we do this, really.
Well, that is how we do it. Yeah, I mean, we're not good enough to do it live.
But, true. In a podcast, you don't have an FM transmitter at your disposal. You
right.
You could do this live if you wanted to.
I think
it
so.
It wouldn't be as, you know, as cool. With the cool
it, we could do it live if we cool. were on satellite.
Yeah.
Look, we could do a satellite radio show. That would be great. I can't watch my mouth enough to get on regular radio. It's never gonna happen. There would be a fucking producer in the other room constantly like,
dump.
Is he gonna say it? Is he gonna, we gotta set this to 45 seconds.
Right.
So how long before you started realizing that, like, there was, like, a real impact being made and people just following it as much as they were? Because I know that, like, I grew up in Barberton, and, I mean, it's a smaller city, but, like, word of mouth about V-Rock started traveling fast, and, like, that's kind of, like, where I would find out about local shows. Like, NDE was, like, a real mm-hmm. big one. Like, I remember Falling was the song.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I was so naive. I never even grasped the concept. I wasn't even grasping the concept still of local bands. Like, I was just
me neither. Like,
I was like, it's on the radio. It's good. It's heavy as shit. Oh, they're coming. They're coming to Ron's Crossroads, or they're playing up at Peabody's. Like, it was just like...
Right.
I was like, oh, well, we got to go. And then they're, you find out it's like just four dudes from down the road and shit. And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, those guys were rock stars to me when I seen them with fucking Cold Chamber.
Yeah.
Like, NDE was fucking rock stars to me. You know what I mean? Like, these guys are fucking amazing. A Wally with his fucking dreadlocks and shit. And I thought they were like fucking superstars. And it's like, no, they're just from down the road.
It's funny you say that because so we had office hours we had to keep. And those were the times where you had to speak to all your reps and everything and do all the bureaucratic nonsense. Right. And... every once in a while, like, we get a knock at the door. We're like, okay, let's go see who it is. And some band would come in, and we were just like, wow, you guys are a real band. You know how to play guitar? Like, the total rock star worship stuff, right? Just like, wow, you guys have a CD?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
What? You know, I remember the Hate Theory guys came in. They were still called Torn and Shattered.
Okay.
And it was two dudes. I don't remember who they were. This is way too long ago. But two dudes came in, and they had a tape. And they're like, we're called Torn and Shattered, and we're from Portage County, and we play heavy metal, and I think we'd be perfect for V-Rock. And, like, we hung out for a while, and we took their tape. They went on their way. We screened it. We're like, yeah, this is cool. So we went in to our production room, and we made what's called a cart, which is, like, a single-track, 8-track.
Okay.
This is how crazy the technology was, right? Like, we're making an 8-track of your cassette song. So we dumped a couple of their tracks to some carts, put them in the library, and then started playing them. And it would pop up randomly in the playlist, like, okay, go play Torn and Shattered. And then at some point they called in and said, hey, can you quit calling us Torn and Shattered? We'll call it Hate Theory now. Like, okay, cool.
Can you stop calling me that?
Well, but
just so you know.
Like you said, like, there was no internet. There was no buzz to say, like, this band changed names. Like, if you changed your name, there was no way to tell anybody. Well, then you had V-Rock, and you actually could. And, like, overnight, they weren't Torn and Shattered anymore. So, like, lots of people came in. I remember the guys from Mushroomhead coming in all the time, like, Popsin and... was it Dinner?
Yeah, Dinner.
Was he still? I mean, he left the band at some point, right?
Yeah. But he was there for a good few years.
Yeah, so like those guys would come in, and like then we were like total rock star worship because like they were huge in Streetsboro. They were probably huge everywhere.
Right.
But it was just like, oh my god, the Mushroom Head guys are hanging out here. This is nuts. And like we're 17 years old, and we're running this radio station.
Yeah,
we have no idea what we're doing.
Greatest things ever. It's to be at 17 and in that position, it would be like fucking mind blowing.
It was cool.
Is that something that you wanted to do for the rest of your life, or was it just a high school thing?
I really enjoyed it. I didn't see that there was like much like money in it.
Right.
I was like, how could you actually get paid doing this without being like the corporate radio show,
Right.
Like, Whoa. But,
we're trapped.
We're locked in the car.
There's no escape now. But, yeah, like, it was really cool to be in, at V-Rock because it was so free.
Right.
You know, I mean, it wasn't like pirate radio. There were rules, but it was like right above it.
Yeah.
Like, you could play anything. If there was a song that was had swearing and you're like, crap, I really want to play this, we'd go do our own radio edits and dump it onto a cart.
That's sweet.
And it's like, okay, we're playing this song because we made our own radio edit. And like,
that wasn't
we actually got pretty good at editing tape. And like, again, you're like no training.
Yeah.
Like, okay, let's cut the tape and splice it. And yeah, we'd go from like CD to a quarter inch reel to reel, reel to reel to cart.
Holy shit.
Nowadays,
you guys had to work for it.
Nowadays, you just put it on your computer, right? And go into your MP3 editor and you're like, put a little fart sound over it and you're done. So, yeah.
So what bands were you responsible for? Like when you came in, what was your shit? Like, what were you like, we got to fucking play this? Like,
right.
Like,
so, like I said, when I first started, I was just kind of starting to develop my own musical taste. You know, like, up until 16, a lot of times, if you like live in the middle of nowhere, like Streetsboro at the time, it's just your parents' taste reverberating through you.
Yep.
So it was Beatles, Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, The Who, right? And then my brother went away to college, and he's bringing home KMFDM and Ministry and My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult and White Zombie and Prong, and I knew Gwar and Metallica and, you know, that stuff. But yeah, so as I got into V-Rock, I started getting way more into like more hardcore and metal stuff. Like, I remember getting the Refused CD from Victory.
Yeah.
It was the Songs to Fan the Flames of Discontent. And I was just like, holy crap, this rules. And like, everybody loves The Shape of Punk to Come, but like, that's my jam. Like,
yeah.
And you know, I'm naive. I didn't even know Born Against existed.
Right.
So I didn't know that Refused was like really like taking a little bit of Slayer and a lot of Born Against and making a record. I was just like, this rules. This is so heavy. Yeah, I'm into it.
Right.
You know, and then I got that Dead Guy record and I was like, where has this been my whole life? And that was like a sea change. When I heard Screaming with the Dead Guy Quintet, which isn't even like the classic Dead Guy record, I heard that and was just like, this is it. And then we got the Kiss It Goodbye record and I was done for. Like, that was the next 10 years of my life, like, metallic hardcore, you know, and, like, and noise rock. Because I'd always, through my brother, known, like, Helmet and that kind of stuff. Yeah, and then the other cool thing that we did when we started is all those CDs I mentioned that we got every week. I mean, it was dozens of albums a week from all kinds of artists. Like, people had no business sending stuff to V-Rock. Like, Sarah McLachlan, REM,
nice.
Some little pop girl singer, just but the promotion company say, oh, you're a radio station.
Here's this.
Here's your weekly delivery. Well, before we took over, Brian and I, that stuff would kind of just go into a box with a sign that said, take what you want. And then they'd throw stuff away. Well, we were like, this REM CD is worth like $6 at the exchange.
why aren't we
figured out how to make money in the radio business?
No. So what we did, this wasn't for personal gain. We said, Bob, like, we're sitting on like capital. If you let us take this in and exchange it at the record exchange, we can buy albums that were never serviced to the radio station and like backfill the catalog.
With stuff that you want
stuff,
to hear.
Stuff that, oh, that, that, right. So, like, believe it or not, we didn't have Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets, or Injustice for All when we first started.
You didn't have any of those?
No.
Like, the biggest metal band.
Right. Now, whether they had been stolen or whatever, they weren't in the collection anymore.
Right.
So it's like, okay. So we went and we traded in the REMs and Sarah McLachlan's of the world to get $6 a hit. And then, like, 20 nobody bands that would add up to, like, $3, right?
Sure.
And we bought and filled in, like, Sabbath and Dio and some Judas Priest and some Metallica. Like, we kind of filled in, like, the roots metal stuff, right? Because you think about it, like, you start a radio station, and, like, let's say immediately through luck, you start getting service with material. You're not going to get service with back catalog. It's just from this point forward.
Right.
You know? So unless you actually make an effort to backfill that stuff, it's never going to happen.
And I remember we bought Scum Dogs of the Universe because I loved that record so much. And
great,
I,
great.
And I was like, we can play like 3 or 4 songs off of this that they're clean enough. And like we traded in some like Pearl Jam or something. And we bought that at the exchange. Yeah.
Man, that's a really, really more than fair trade. That's...
You know, and that's a funny tangent. So right around that time, what was the Guar record that came out in 96? It had, it started with Penguin Attack. Was that Carnival of Chaos?
Yes, Carnival of Chaos, yes.
Right, so they were going on tour, and like one of my really, like one of our really good reps that we had a good relationship with, was like, they're playing the Machine in Massillon, which is like 1.5 hours from my house, the night before my brother's birthday. Can you get me a meet and greet with Guar? And he's like, I'll do you better. I'll get you an interview with Guar. And I'm like, great, this is going to be sweet. And my brother's like a Guar super fan, right?
Right.
So he's home from college for the summer, and he and my buddy Brian, we all go down to the Machine, and we strut up like big man on campus, right?
Bro, yeah.
And this is where I said I'm going to lose my pro credentials. I did 0 prep work.
For the interview.
For an interview. I was like, I'll just wing it. Like, you just ask some stupid questions, right? So we walk up to the door. And did you guys ever go to the Machine?
I've been down there.
It was hellhole. Terrible. I think it got condemned for being a crack house finally, right?
I don't know. Whatever happened to it. I have no idea. I remember going down there a long time ago.
Terrible place.
I'm going to go with crack house.
Yeah. Like, it was bad. And I don't mean to slander or whatever, but it was a horrible place. Anyway.
Fuck you, Machine.
Facts are facts.
We walk in. We're like, hey, we're here to interview Guar. And this little dude's like, all right, let me go check if this is okay. And I like name dropped some code word I was supposed to say. I don't know what it was.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's cool. Right. So I got my foot in. So they made us sit for a few minutes. And this Motley Crue comes out, and they sit at this table, and they bring us over, and they're all out of costume. So I can remember, like, Dave Brockie's to my left, and Slemenstra was down at the end of the table, like, directly across from me, and then whoever's Balzac was over here, and then Beefcake was over here, and then they were just, like, slaves in and out the whole time. So I pull out my little tape recorder, and I'm like, you know, I work for WSTB, we're an all-metal high school radio station, and we play, like, a ton of Guar. Like, by then, we had just dozens of songs in the playlist. So they were, like, way into it.
Were they stoked by the whole fact that you were a high school metal radio station?
Brocky was just like, wait, you're a high school station? I'm like, yeah. And you play us? I'm like, yeah. He's like, that's really cool.
That's awesome.
Hell yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
And, you know, I do a... capture like one of those lead-ins that they would do where he's like, this is he's like, he does the Odorous Orungus voice, and you'll remember it was an old sweep in between songs. He's like, hey, you human, you're listening to 88.9 V-Rock WSTV Streetsboro, right? And he like nails it one take, and I'm like, sweet. So then we go into the interview, and I'm like, so what's your guys' major influences?
Oh, shit.
And I remember.
What's your major? Yeah. That's the best question ever.
Right. So Beefcake or Flatus, whoever it was, stands up and just goes, I'm leaving. Immediately leaves. And Slemenstra kind of like stands up, and she doesn't say anything, but she leaves. So it's like Odorous and Balzac. And he answers. He's like, Black Sabbath, Black Flag, Monty Python. I'm like, that's cool. And then I ask some equally asinine question next, and he looks at me, and he's like, did you prepare for this?
You're like, no.
And I was like, no, I don't really know what I'm doing. This is my first band interview. And he's like, all right, let's do this a little different. And he takes my tape recorder away from me, and he goes, what if Guar interviews you?
Oh, did this happen?
Yeah.
Oh.
What?
And I'm like, okay, this is out of my control now because you have my tape recorder.
You can't say no.
Right? So, like, he launches into this very interesting line of questioning. It was very awkward and embarrassing, but exhilarating and awesome all at the same time.
Right.
Like, I've got a tape of it somewhere if I could ever find it.
But it was just like, how would you describe your first orgasm? You know, and
you're like, I haven't had one
just
yet. I don't know.
Right. I'm like, I'm a high school loser. I don't know. And then my brother's like, it was all right. And
it was, I mean, I was by myself. And mid afternoon, I had a steak sandwich.
Yeah, and like, it was just, it was a lot of fun. It was really like, I had to be beet red because I get very red when I'm embarrassed. I was probably just like dying, but it was also so cool that like Dave Brocky was actually having this like really. Like personal interaction with us.
Yeah, it's fucking amazing.
And like all the other guys kind of just sat there and enjoyed the show at that point.
Right.
And I remember Slimenstra came back at some point and was like, hey, we gotta start getting ready. But yeah, that was funny. And then as they were all leaving, you know, we finally had a chance to like look around the venue. And there was no plastic like over the soundboard, and there was no plastic over their nice benches and booths and stuff. So we saw the owner walking around, this big, tall dude. I think they called him Red because he had red, long red hair, you know, like overkill t-shirt. And we're like, do you know what Guar does? He's like, yeah, they're like a crazy punk band. They shoot Silly String around. I'm like,
what? Silly String?
He said Silly String?
No, I'm not. Don't quote me on this because this is all 20-some years ago.
Sure. But I'm going
yeah,
with Silly
String. He doesn't understand what's about to happen. So we say they shoot like water at pressure out into the crowd. So you might want to cover up some of your stuff. And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, we're going to get to that. Well, the doors open and the place packs. There's no time to get to it anymore. So they had all these like, it was a weird place. Like there was all these old booths. Like maybe it was a restaurant at some point with the vinyl seats and like the... Yeah, just like a really rundown kind of old plush environment. And it all got destroyed. The ceiling, the awesome. Ceilings were like 10 feet tall. So they were just shooting their gut guns just straight to the back of the room, just hosing everything down. It was so, the stage was so small. Gorgor couldn't fit on it. All you could see was his head poking out.
Oh my God.
So they played Gorgor and like Odorous is like just hitting his head with his sword. And oh my gosh, that was such a good show. Yeah, and then afterwards, somebody stole all Slimenture's stuff from the back alley.
Oh. Really?
So, yeah.
Wow.
So the place was so small, they didn't have a secure area for all their props. So, like, after the show, she's, like, outside, like, ah, oh, somebody stole my abortion rig.
Oh. Oh, that's so fucked.
Yeah. But, like, a couple of days later, I got to go on Clutch's tour bus, and I got to meet JP and Tim. And
were you a bit more prepared?
No, I did not learn my lesson. But they were so chill, and like it was definitely more of a meet and greet vibe.
Yeah,
you know, like I got on the bus, and they were like, "You want to smoke some weed?" And I'm like, "No, I don't smoke, but like I'd like to talk to you about your band and whatever." And they recorded a sweep for us too, and I mean, it was really really nice.
Did you find out who their influences were?
You know, I didn't ask.
You avoided it.
You were so unprepared that time.
Yeah, I stayed away from most, really any questions. I made it more about getting some good sweeps. It was like, hey, we play a ton of Clutch. Can I just get some, like, some good...
Do some promo shit.
Yeah, can you just do some cool promo? And then I just, like, shot the breeze with them. Like, you guys ever check out Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, anything like that, when you pass through Cleveland? And they're like, oh, not yet. I mean, this was 96, but, yeah.
So you got to interact with Guar and Clutch like within a week of each other.
Right.
Oh my God.
Right.
The jealousy, it burns right now.
But then
it's burning.
I was so like those both had been set up in advance. You know, it was like Clutch was on a Stoner Palooza tour. So it was them and Fu Manchu and Orange 9mm and Core at the Odeon.
Holy shit.
That'd have been a dope show.
And, Holy shit. It was my first time seeing Clutch, one of many, many times. Their bus was out front of the Odeon. I really wanted to meet Neil because I always thought he was like the coolest. Just, like, I love his words.
He's cool as fuck.
He's so cool.
And he wasn't on the bus, but Tim and JP were both super awesome, nice guys. But I was so shell shocked from Brocky that I never pushed for another interview.
Oh, really?
For like the rest of my tenure,
you're just like, oh, no. So
your interview days were done.
Yeah.
So you got Gwar and Clutch. That's your two.
But yeah. you do have that Gwar interview on tape somewhere?
Somewhere.
Oh, dude, I gotta hear that.
Somewhere.
I gotta hear that.
If I could find it.
If you find that, we'll just make that. I just want to make that an episode of this podcast. That'll be a special episode. It's too embarrassing.
It should be in a Lucite case with like screws in it, sitting on the mantle with like lights beaming down on it.
It's an Maxell, like MX2. Tape. That's just a nondescript gray tape, right from the day. I might have wrote like 88.9 on it or something.
Oh, I gotta fucking hear that.
I know. But yeah, if I can find it. We want
exclusive access to this interview,
and I want to put that up as its own episode of this podcast.
That'll be its own thing.
I'd have to get waivers from everybody involved. My brother might not want some of that hurt either. I don't know. I mean, you know how perverted Brocky's mind was on album.
Yeah,
it was just as perverted and insane. Like in this discussion we had, I was talking about. Like being trapped in the Antarctic ice and like pooping out icicles and eating the poop icicles to get the nourishment back out of them. And that's how he survived so long frozen in our Antarctica.
Oh man.
Just like recycling his own feces time after time after time. Yeah, it was great.
Brocky,
so yeah, after that we would just try to do sweeps with people. We never pushed for interviews because I was just like, I'm too meek for this.
Mm.
I don't know how to write good questions. I have no journalism training. I'm just a nerd who's got this cool job, who likes weird music that nobody else, you know, in my school liked. So, boom, I get to be program director, you know.
Okay, so back in the late 90s, when it was still uncool to be nerdy, right? Did this radio show and the position and the job that you had on the radio show kind of launch you into some fucking radio popularity in your high school with your peers?
No.
Your peers were like,
they were all still like, fucking nerd.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Huge nerd.
So you have people listening to you all over the fucking place.
Yeah, like seriously, like, everywhere. You're like, hanging out with rock stars.
Like, I shit you not. I used to have metal coat hangers that in my bedroom that I would attach to each other just so I could get a signal in my bedroom to listen to you playing Cold Chamber and Clutch. And nobody in your school, if I went to school with you at that time, I would have been like, yeah, I would have just been worshiping your
You have to remember, there was a lot of DJs. So, you know, a lot of the football players and wrestlers, they were DJs too. They took the radio class.
Yeah.
So, like, if anybody was going to get popular off of the radio station, it was the guys who were already popular.
Yo, we're going to play that brand new Metallica, Offload.
Yeah. Offload!
Right. This is Until It Sleeps. Just want you to rock out with your cock out. Football.
I will say that, like... I don't know if our class started it or if the earlier teams were doing it too. We would go out around town and do like remotes on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going down to Kent a couple times and maybe someplace into Akron, and we'd set up our remote and the DJ back at the studio would play music, and then throughout the night they'd, you know, throw it over to whatever record store we were at or wherever. And I can remember talking to a lot of people there. And meeting a lot of folks who are like, oh, hey, yeah, you're the dude that does that Friday show where you play, like, all the deep cuts. Because I was that annoying guy who was like, you know what? I've already heard all of these Pantera songs. I'm going to check out, what is this agoraphobic nosebleed?
Yeah.
You know? And, like, I actually would play all the stuff that the other DJs would scratch out and put in requests over. So you probably hated my show at the time. Because yeah, I'd be like, Leeway. I don't know what Leeway sounds like. Let's play Leeway. And then let's play Sam Black Church. Oh, that was cool. That was actually really sweet. All right, let's Scissor Fight. Oh, that's cool. Tree, nice. Like, I wasn't interested in exploring stuff I already knew. You know?
Fucking right. Tree, dude. I still have a Jägermeister Tree shirt.
Tree ruled.
At my house.
I love Tree.
I was just listening to Scissor Fight the other week.
They have a new record coming out.
What?
Yep.
What?
Yeah.
Lizards, Buzzards, Bastards.
Yeah, I think they have a new singer.
Really?
But.
Does he actually have range?
No. He does the exact same thing that the old guy did. He kind of just talks his way through all the songs, but their riffs are so good.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's hard to beat a Scissor Fight riff.
You dare start playing music, Carl.
So what were the years from, like, when it was 91.5 and then it switched to 88.9? When was the switch?
I want to say, like, 90, was it 95 they switched to 88.9?
Okay.
Maybe.
You know who Siegenthaler is, right? Brandon Siegenthaler?
He's the drummer for Feds and Cheapy. Yeah.
I don't know him.
We were talking today, and he said that his dad actually has a 91.5 V-Rock neon sign that he fucking won from the radio station. And he was like, yeah, we still got it.
Yeah.
He's like, that's one of the things that I want. And I'm like, it's fucking amazing. That'd be fucking so sweet. Because I don't even remember when it was 91.5. I've always known it as 88.9.
It was a relatively short period. Because, like, I think, like I said, Longo kind of got it, the idea planted. And then it started. My brother was a DJ in 92, 93. And it was still already going strong at that point.
Yeah.
So it probably started in, like, 91?
So early 90s.
Something like that, gotcha. Yeah. So I think it made it, like, 5 years before the frequency change. That sounds right. Somebody could research this. It won't be me. But, you know, that's one thing I regret. I got rid of all of my merch. Like, I had the long sleeve 88.9 shirts.
Oof.
Like, because they were extra larges, and I went away to college.
For one of those right now.
And I, like,
I think Tim Schauer has one.
I think they're going to be selling them at that documentary screening they're doing.
Oh, right on.
Oh, yeah, Streetsboro
Auditorium.
Yeah, November 16th.
Yeah.
Wino Productions. It is Wino.
Yeah. Is it Wino?
It is Wino.
Oh, look at that.
Wino.
Yeah, and funny, Mike Custis is involved with that, too.
That's how you pronounce it.
Oh,
Mike Custis.
So Mike has been involved with the radio station, like, it seems like forever. And he like, runs this private Facebook group. It's, like, Remembering 88.9, STB, whatever.
Add us to it, Mike Custis.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, he's always been really passionate about it. He was, like, in his 20s when we were 17.
Mm-hmm.
He was, I think, the... I forget what he did. Maybe he sold time to, like this hour of music's brought to you by Pizza Hut. Yes. He might have been the guy that sold all the time. Or maybe he was promotions director. Whatever, it doesn't matter. The point is, like, he's involved with that documentary. He's been there since the beginning. So he has a way better recollection than I do. But, yeah, like, I remember I lost all this weight. And I'm like, I don't need these giant long-sleeve shirts anymore. And I got rid of them.
Oh, and now you're like, fuck. And
now it's like, I probably could have sold that on eBay. Yeah.
I would have paid hefty for one.
Yeah, for sure.
And I promise there's plenty of people locally that would have paid hefty for one. Like an original fucking 88.9 long-sleeve. Yeah, I would have dropped money on that, dude.
Yeah. So the funny thing is, a couple years ago, Bob had an alumni meeting at the old high school.
Okay.
And it was like, hey, if you were a DJ or if you were staff, like, come on down and see what we're doing nowadays. See the new technology, see the new room, because they had added TV production and all that crap. And we went in and we still had our 88.9 staff badges. And, like, mine says program director. And you asked the question a while ago, did people think I was cool?
Yeah.
That was the only time anybody ever thought I was cool. I walked in and this little high school kid was like, okay. What was your job with at WSTV? And I showed him my badge, and he was just like, oh, my God.
You were like the fucking band.
You were program director of V-Rock. Like, I was one of them. There were two after me. And then we handed it off to Chuck Rodebush.
Yeah, I met Chuck Rodebush.
And then he handed it off to somebody whose name I don't know, because I was in college, you know, 2 years at that point. I was still DJing in the summers. And unfortunately, those are the guys that got to ride the whale into the dirt, right? Because of Columbine.
That was like the end of V-Rock,
it was.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. I was doing like Wednesday night or Thursday night shifts, just like on my break from school. And I got in a car accident, and I couldn't make my shift. So they had to do an emergency fill-in, whatever. That would have been my last shift. I missed doing my last show ever.
Oh, so you
didn't
even,
because all of that went down before the next Wednesday happened. So, that's how quickly
they blame Marilyn Manson and then cut your fucking radio
station? All that happened like in the spring, right? I don't remember the Columbine timeline.
It was
like
April 20th.
Yeah, so like that happened. I was home from school, so it was like May or something. So there was already this pressure from the like the conservative groups of Portage County that this was an evil influence on the kids. Right. I mean, even when I was there and when my brother was there, like it always fought that stigma. Right? Like the logo was an upside down anarchy symbol.
Right.
Like most people didn't get that. The original V-Rock logo.
I just realized that's what that is.
Yeah, the original V-Rock logo had the circle around the V and then the line going through it.
I remember that. And I've never put that together.
Never put it together until just now.
It's anarchy.
Motherfucking, that's so cool.
And the V is for Venom, the Rock is for you. That's what it stood for. And yeah, I mean, people were always like calling up, what song did you just play? Like you could tell it was some like old mom. What song did you just play? Let me look at my log. I played Neurosis. Eon. Because that's what I would play like late at night on Friday.
Nobody was playing Neurosis.
Right. Well, I was on Friday night. You know, and then we'd get a complaint. There was this creepy satanic song played on Friday night. There's nothing satanic about that song.
Right.
But that's just what they heard. That's what they wanted to hear.
Yeah.
And then Columbine like really gave them something to latch onto. Like, look at these two loners. They listened to this scary music and they went and shot up a bunch of kids. And
they also came from a well-to-do family and drove BMWs. So those fucking, all that shit should be, frowned upon too.
It's like the nails were already in the coffin lid from the beginning. And that event hammered them in.
Ugh.
So in that week span, Bob just said, I'm tired. I'm done fighting. Like I'm putting it in, you know, words in his mouth. I don't know what his actual processing was, but it was just like, it can't be worth it. You're a teacher. Do you really want to be dealing with this? Like going to the school board every year or however often and fighting for your program? Or you just say, let's switch to alternative rock.
Right.
And just be done with all of the theatrics and demagoguery and whatever and just...
You keep your radio station and you don't have to fucking put up with this shit no more. It was easy, yeah.
Yeah, and the show we're talking about was supposed to be at Streetsboro High School.
It was at the high school.
Supposed to be at the high school.
I have no
Mushroom
idea how
Head at that time locally was at their, they were in their prime.
Like yeah. I remember when this was happening and shit. Like,
yeah, I was trying to go to that show. I was 3-4 years deep into fucking V-Rock at that time. And so like, I was like, this is my opportunity to go, because I had already made friends through the radio station, just like finding out about local shows. I would meet people and we all shared the exact same love. Like, yeah, I heard these guys on V-Rock and it was, so there was already a community being built from that. And so the show at Streetsboro High School was Mushroom Head, who was the biggest shit in the world at that time.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still pretty fucking huge. I don't know. I mean, they are playing the Agora November 1st with Half Raised Heathens. I'm just saying.
They've done well for
they're
themselves.
Doing okay. NDE, Dolly Trauma, and Hate Theory. Some of the most popular, best, in my opinion, best bands.
Yeah.
From around the scene at that time. And so it was a big fucking deal. And then next thing you know, it's just not fucking happening. Columbine happens. This isn't happening. And then V-Rock no longer exists. Yep. All just like one fatal fucking swoop.
Yeah, it happened fast.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
And then that was it. Then there was never a local scene after that, right? Like, never...
The scene did just fine.
Yeah.
You just had to fucking go out and actually get your music now. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, you had to work harder for it, which immediately does impact it, because people are lazy inherently.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, that was 99. The internet still sucked in 99.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I didn't even, this is another naivety here. I didn't even know Annabelle's existed until, like, early 2000s. Like, I missed years, like, what year was it? I came here to see Dave Johnson. He plays drums in Deathcrawl. He played bass in Solace, which was a Cleveland thrash band. And I met him through some dudes that worked at V-Rock. So this is all my incestuous life. I'm like, I'm going to go see Dave play at this place called Annabelle's because I loved Solace. And Don Austin was playing.
Oh.
So that's the night I met Larry, because Larry was in Splinter for a minute with Dave. You know, so I was just like, this place is really awesome. Why didn't I know that this existed?
It's one of the best fucking holes in the wall
ever. And I think a lot, like even today, that's probably a problem for all the Facebook algorithms in the world. Like, if people don't know something exists, they're never going to go to it.
Yeah.
Right.
And you talk about all the awesome shows that are happening. The kids would probably really have a good time seeing it.
Yeah.
They just don't even know it exists.
Right.
You remember turning on MMS back in the day and it was like a commercial for a concert? Do you remember that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nobody does that anymore. Unless it's like at Brown Stadium or something, right? Like Kenny Chesney, Celine Dion, Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Like nobody can afford that to do promotion.
Right.
Even to get an ad in Scene Magazine or whatever is comparable nowadays. It's like cost prohibitive. Like, holy crap. I want to promote my show. What do I do? And V-Rock was great for that because every week, here's a list of crap that's happening.
Yeah, that's seriously, like, that was my, I mean,
it was our flyer.
Yeah, that was, like, my life for years was every weekend I was going to different shows, whether it was local or, you know, a national, or like a touring band that I was into. Most of them I got from V-Rock. Most of the bands that I was into, like, holy shit, I went through this weird propane phase. You can tell your friends, your moms, and your mom. Fucking propane, yeah. Was it Don't Kill Yourself to Live? Like, that song was like, that was like my fucking theme song for forever. Like, yeah, that became my life for a good while. And then after it went, like, it was serious. It was depressing. Like, it
after
was
after the radio station,
yeah. When the radio station went, it became alternative. Oh, what a punch to the fucking gut.
Because we had enough of that shit, dude. Like, there was everywhere. It was fucking, you know, alternative rock 107.9, The End.
Yeah, it wasn't even alternative anymore. It was mainstream, so it was like, what's this alternative to?
Right.
Like, what the fuck?
To be fair, I mean, they did keep playing a lot of local stuff. It just wasn't local stuff I was interested in anymore.
Right.
Like, a lot of local pop-punk bands
and
stuff.
I never got into the pop-punk thing. Yeah, like, those are just two things that just...
To each their own.
Yes.
I was too old for it, I think, at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, they kind of kept their foot in the local... game,
which is good, just a different
different avenue.
Puddle.
Yeah. And they didn't really seem as engaged in it. It was like, we'll play you, but we're not really going to...
We don't really care.
We're not going to promote you very much.
Like they would... After I left, Rowdebush got really big in bringing bands on the air. That was one of the things he brought to it. He also brought like rap, more like real rap. To the station.
He
bought ICP.
I was going to say, he's the guy who brought Insane Clown Posse into this.
So, like, I remember, like, the first week he was on the job, he's like, I'm adding Chicken Hunting. We're like, okay, it's your baby now. Whatever you want to do. Whatever you want to do. We're going to add this, but that's fine. He brought in Cold Chamber. He had them live on the air a couple times. They would come through for Ron's Crossroads, and they were on the air.
He told me about that when I got to talk to him. Chuck Ratty Bush, super nice dude, man. Mm-hmm. He was a lot of fun to just hang out with and shit. He told me about Cold. He's like, Cold Chamber came in. I was like, yep. Son of a bitch. That's
so is that where you first heard ICP was on there?
Or were you no. Okay. I was already like a year or so deep into ICP, but it blew my mind the first time I heard the song Halls of Illusions off of The Great Malenko,
like on the radio,
V-Rock. Yeah. And I was just like, oh, this is my world. And I always tell people, ICP shows back in like 97, 98, it was a heavy metal crowd. It was way different than what it is now. There wasn't whoop whoop family chants. It was a lot of the same people that I would see at a Crypt Kicker or a fucking Mushroom Head show.
Yeah.
Or Gwar. Yeah. Or especially Gwar. Yeah. It was the same kind of atmosphere. Mm. And I think V-Rock might have had a little bit of something to do with that, because there was probably a lot of people that had no clue what the fuck ICP was. And he's playing like the guitar driven songs like a Chicken Hunting.
Right.
So, yeah, it was different. It was cool. But yeah, V-Rock, I think, had something to do with that. So thanks, Chuck Rowdy Bush. Not that Chuck Rowdy Bush is listening to the podcast.
What do you mean?
When I talked to him, I was telling him, I was like, the podcast that we do, like, I like to, we're very influenced by what V-Rock did. And he's like, I did that when I was 17, so you're what? You're like a middle-aged man? Okay. Cool. Yeah. Cool, man.
Keep doing it up.
And we will, because we got nothing else.
I got nothing else to do, Chuck Rowdy Bush. What kind of name is Rowdy Bush? That's a cool name. I wish my last name was Rowdy Bush.
It's better than Lechka.
No!
Yeah, I mean, for me, there's a nostalgia to it. I mean, that definitely wasn't, like, the peak of my life.
Right.
But it was really cool. Like, just all the free records that I got.
Yeah.
Off of, like, I remember this dude, Dave Cashone. He was I think that's what his last name was. Whatever. This guy from New York City. He would hook me up. Be like, I love this record. Can I have a copy? Yeah, there's 10. Sweet. And then we had stuff for giveaways.
That's awesome.
You know, the dudes at Relapse were really good. I'm trying to remember what his name was. He ended up being like getting like big in the PR world. I'm like reading Decibel and like his name's in there. I'm like, he's still at it. Cool. I remember Dillinger Escape Plan was touring with Mr. Bungle right when California came out.
Holy fuck. Wow.
And we were tight with the Relapse dude, and he was like, I'm going to put you on the guest list, on Dillinger's guest list. All you got to do is get to Peabody's. So we did not buy tickets because we were on the guest list. So I remember Brian and I drive down to Peabody's, and we walk up to the door, and we're like, we're on the guest list for Dillinger Escape Plan. And they're like, no, you're not.
Oh, shit.
And we're like,
that's the worst.
What?
I've had to tell people that so many times.
Oh,
dude.
No. And so then we saw like this Relapse Street Teamer kid that we knew. And we got to talk to him. He's like, yeah, like they promised way too many spots. And so I remember this. We were trying to, like, the only time in my life I've tried to buy scalp tickets, right? Like, anybody selling tickets on the sidewalk. I want to see Mr. Bungle.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I've never seen them. This is my one shot, probably. And nobody had two tickets to sell. And there was two of us that, like, Brian drove. So, like, we both had to get in or we both had to leave, right? It was no good to buy one ticket.
Yeah.
And I remember Mike Patton walks out onto the sidewalk. He's standing, like, 2 feet from us. And he's like, hey, does anybody have, like, 8 4-inch lag screws? And like, of course, nobody has a pocket full of lag screws on the sidewalk outside of Peabody's, right? And then he's like, first person that brings me what I need is getting in the show tonight. And me and Brian are like, where's a hardware store in the flats? Like, there was, I mean, we had no idea. We're not Cleveland people. Like, right. We're from Streetsboro. Like, well, we could drive out to, I think there's a hardware store in Bedford. Like, oh my God. Like, so
we can drive 20 minutes out and 20 minutes back and it'll still be cool.
Yeah, we didn't do it. We didn't make it. I remember we just ended up driving out to like Lorraine listening to like 5 seconds expired or something. I don't know. But
oh,
it was like, that was my one chance to see Mr. Bungle and I blew it because I didn't know where a hardware store was in downtown Cleveland.
So I was somebody that didn't even know who Mr. Bungle was back then. Like, I didn't know who Mr. Bungle was until Bobby Clark introduced me to Mr. Bungle. And
he
showed up at my dad's house one night, and he fucking knocks on the door, and I come out, and he was like, get in the car, we're going to Mr. Bungle. And I went, who's Mr. Bungle? He goes, get in the fucking car! And then we drove up to Cleveland and fucking seen him at the, I think it was at the Odeon. And they were fucking amazing.
Was that Snowcore with System of a Down?
No, I can't remember who they played with that night, if they played with anybody. I remember they came out dressed like the Beach Boys.
Yeah, that might have been Snowcore. I was in Toledo at school. I missed that. Okay. That was my other shot to see Mr. Bungle that I also blew. I have a long list.
Poor Jason.
The worst thing you can do is go away to college if you're from a town that has a music scene and like go to a town that doesn't really have a music scene.
And then you just want to go home the whole time?
Yeah, like I already knew, like I said, I knew Dead Guy, I knew Kiss It Goodbye. I went to college, and I learned about, like, Botch.
Wow, Botch is sweet.
And, like, Ink and Dagger and all that stuff. And I would see them playing at the Euclid Tavern, like, on a Thursday or something. I'm like, well, I can't get from Toledo to Euclid Tavern. It's not going to happen, so yeah. I guess I'm missing that. Then they break up, and then you never see them, and then you whine about it until you're 40 years old.
Dude, I think I've seen one show at the Euclid Tavern.
Yeah.
And it would, I'd fucking have to rake my brain to figure out who that was. But yeah, that was that. But that club is like legendary.
It was so legendary. Tiny. Just, yeah. It just felt like a dive bar. I saw, you know the band AFI?
Yeah.
I saw AFI at the Euclid Tavern back when they were actually a punk band.
It was
awesome.
That's where Green Day played their first show, right?
Yep. Yep.
Was at the Euclid Tavern.
Yeah, we saw Cave In there, International Noise Conspiracy.
Ooh.
I remember going to see Willhaven, and this is funny, Ascension was playing the show, who Dave from Deathcrawl was also a bass player in Ascension, but I didn't know him at this time.
Oh, shit.
And we got to the venue, and they're like, yeah, Willhaven's not going to make it. We were like, well, let's go home. And we just blew it. We didn't bother staying to watch Ascension probably rip. So I'm like, you know, a couple years later, and I actually like become friends with Dave and everything. It's like, oh man, you were in Ascension? Crap.
So there was this one night.
And then like I went to a couple of their reunion shows. And I was like, crap, I should have went with you. I was there. I was outside the venue talking to people. And I was like, yeah, Will Haven's not playing. Let's go home.
I am guilty of leaving clubs early and missing things.
Oh, yeah.
Like Larry breaking his neck.
Yeah.
I was there. Yeah.
So after you were a teenager doing the whole V-Rock thing, you ended up going and become, when did you join, you became a musician yourself, like you are, you're in Deathcrawl, which I'm playing now because I haven't played anything. Deathcrawl!
Yeah.
crawl.
I talk too much. I'm sorry.
No, this is fucking awesome. I love doing this. It was the same thing with Larry. Like people.
It's easier when people just go.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, 100%. It makes the edit so much better.
Yeah. So to answer your question, I bought my first bass the summer after I handed it over to Rowdybush. So 97, I bought Brian's sister's boyfriend's Mexican Fender bass. And this little guitar amp, and I took it off to college with me and just made crap up. I never had any interest in learning how to play anybody else's stuff.
You just kind of figured it out.
Which was a huge mistake. Don't be like me, kids. Learn how to play people's songs, right? It makes your life way easier. But I would download one riff on Tab or something. How do I play the Bad Mood riff from the Helmet, right? Oh, okay, that's easy. Let's go back to making crap up.
Right.
And I just had my little tape recorder I used to record Dave Brocky. I still had it. I would just record riffs in my room. And I came home that summer, that would have been summer of 98, and we started our first band, me and my brother and my friend Kyle, and we were called the Ginger Dead Men. We were like, yeah, this is a great name.
I fucking remember you guys.
Yeah.
The Ginger Dead Men? Yeah. I don't, but Grant's staring at
totally,
you like,
I totally remember you guys.
I met Grant at the Outpost playing there as the Ginger Dead Men.
Yeah.
But, so we didn't have any drummers, so we just for 10 years, I'm not exaggerating, for 10 years we recorded songs to pre-programmed beats off of a Yamaha commercially available keyboard.
Nice!
And it was let's try the funk beat for this song.
Oh, you know?
And this is the next lesson for kids. Don't do that.
Find a drummer.
Learn to play drums yourself. Anyway, so we did that for 10 years and 2006, 2007, Kyle and I were let's do a real band. Let's find a drummer. So we met this dude, Mark Humphreys, and we started this kind of ISIS worship band called Cosmonaut. Never played a show. We just, would riff for 12 minutes at a time and call it a song. And Mark was always traveling for work. So it's let's start a new band. So Kyle and I started These Lakes, These Graves, and we did two shows. One was with Rue and Deadbird, and the other was with Rue and Burn Blue Sky.
Oh, nice.
So there were two really good shows to play.
Yeah.
But that band, it wasn't destined to last. Joe Hartman was the singer of that band. He was in Morningstar and some of the Ravenna hardcore bands. I'm sorry, Joe. I can't remember. He sang for us. And anyway, I was like, I want to do a show at my house with These Lakes, These Graves. And our drummer had a side project. His band was going to open. We were like, we need one more band. It's we wrote 40 Ginger Dead Men's, 50, whatever they were, songs. Let's get my buddy Sean to come play drums and we'll do 8 songs as a set. And then These Lakes, These Graves will headline my basement. And we did it, and it was holy crap. It was way better than the These Lakes, These Graves set, right? It was that felt really good.
Yeah.
I think this band might be where we need to pivot to this band.
Whoops.
Because These Lakes, These Graves was more Mastodon and Kylesa-influenced stuff, which I really liked playing. It was crustier, whereas Ginger Dead Men was like a stoner punk, And, so that was 2008. The guy who drummed for us that night was a really good singer. He was in a band called Redshift.
Okay, I remember those dudes.
Yep. And he's like, I don't want to drum, I want to sing. So, I wrote all the lyrics. He just sang them. We got Jason Craig, who was in Suspect and A Better Lie. They used to play with Dolly Trauma.
I remember
a million
Suspect,
times.
Yeah, Suspect was always playing.
Yeah, they were at Ron's Crossroads every 2 days or whatever. So he drummed for us, and that was the lineup until 2012. Our singer quit, and we had a Karma to Burn show to play at Annabelle's. So my buddy Ryan, who I met at V-Rock, who introduced me to Dave, right? He's like, I'll sing for you for one night only. So he memorized our encyclopedia of lyrics for one crappy show, right? How gut-wrenching must that be to not get asked back? you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, yeah. It wasn't anything, it was like, he did an awesome job. It was just like, he was more of like the Bruce Dickinson school of vocals, and he knocked it out of the park that night, but we wanted more.
You wanted dirtier.
We wanted something a little dirtier, right? Like biker rock, whatever. And Kenny introduced us to Nate Rader.
Oh, fuck, I love Nate. Yeah, he's such a fucking sweetheart, Nate. Yep.
Yeah, I remember he came over to my house, and he's like, hey, I'm Nate. And he looked like such a burnout. He had, like, long hair and a bandana and denim, everything. Nice. I was like, you are perfect for this band. Yeah. And I think we did another year as Ginger Dead Men and switched to Super Corruptor.
Nice.
So that was that whole boring lineage for the folks at home.
Super Corruptor is fucking badass, by the Thanks. Way. Like, jam your guys' shit a lot more than you would think. It's way up there. First time I saw you guys live, I was just like, this is rock and roll. Like, this is fucking rock and fucking roll, dude. You guys kill it. I highly recommend Super Corruptor. We'll play that at the end of the show.
We will be playing November 16th.
Yes.
After that V-Rock thing in Streetsboro, you can drive to Musica, and Nodge is going to play. Nodge is Aaron and Adam, who were the rhythm section in Contra.
Oh, okay.
They're like new super heavy band. And then Radian's playing.
Mike Burns.
The new Mike Burns, Jeff Fall.
Right, Burns and Jeff. And then Chris Chiera is on bass.
Yeah.
And Jeff Sullivan, who was in like Oxnards and Fistula.
Yeah. He was in Fistula and too, yeah. Those guys are all keeping in 99 legends. All four of those dudes.
Jeff also was like a guitar tech for fucking 98 Degrees. Back in the day, honestly. Really? I'll throw that one in there. That's how I met Jeff.
That's
Jeff
a nice story.
And his brother Sully. Sully's like one of the biggest fucking sound guys in the country. Like, everybody knows fucking Sully, especially if you're like a major touring band. He's worked with fucking everybody and shit.
Nice.
So that's how, when I met them, they were working for 98 Degrees, like touring with those guys. And Sean had toured with them the entire time they were 98 Degrees and was their sound guy. And yeah, Jeff would go out and fucking drum tech and guitar tech for those dudes.
That's cool.
And I always thought it was cool as well. Yeah. I'm like, these guys are fucking so sweet. Like, fuck 98 Degrees, but these guys' jobs are fucking sweet.
Right. It's a good gig.
Oh, dude.
Who cares
so,
you?
Yeah,
you
so good. For. So good. Yeah, and then Sean ended up moving out to fucking L.A. and, you know, becoming who he is and making all kinds of fucking rock star money and shit. Good for him.
And before we go, I got to say, I feel like we're kind of kindred spirits, all of us here in the car, because you write a lot of reviews on...
I do, the Super Corruptor blog.
Yeah, the Super Corruptor blog, which it... Fantastic. I get excited. I get giddy when you're like, wrote a thing about a show or wrote a thing about an album, and... I mean, you go to a fuck ton of shows. You take
not as many as I'd like to.
Well, more than most people.
The Boko coverage was great. You know.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You take great photos. You write. You're a hell of a fucking writer, dude.
Wow. Well, thank you.
And what you do, it's just it kind of reminds me of the V-Rock days, because it's important. It's important for things that are so as good as a lot of the bands that are around here. And there are so many good fucking bands.
Absolutely.
And the fact that people aren't putting them out there, aren't doing, you know, it's just, it sucks. And so when I first heard about the Super Corruptor blog, when I discovered it, I was like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, I had no clue. I was like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, how do I get to know this fucking guy? Because I feel like what we do, like, it, you know, Keeping It 99 has kind of turned into a big Northeast Ohio thing. Like, it didn't really start off like that.
Did it?
I mean, content-wise. I don't mean as far as relevancy. I'm talking, like, content-wise. Like, what we talk about is a lot of the, I mean, how many Northeast Ohio bands have you mentioned tonight?
What we talk about is important to us.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So it's going to be important to like-minded individuals.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
And yeah, we're all cut from the same fucking cloth.
We're all cut from the same cloth. Yeah. We all want the Blackout Cookout. We all know who Goost is.
Yeah.
We know Goost. You write about him. We talk about him. And I think it's awesome stuff. So people should go check that out. Like, if you listen to this show, our demographic, if you're listening to Keeping It 99, I more than recommend, I demand that you go fucking check out the Super Corruptor blog, because it is really, really fucking solid shit. And I love seeing that.
I mean, it's better than what we do.
For sure.
We talk shit as to where, you know, you're more focused on the haps of what is...
Well, yeah, I mean, the idea of it was, I realized I had really stagnated in, like, what I was listening to and what I was experiencing in 2016. I was like, what am I doing? Like, I haven't found anything new in years. Like, I'm going to make a concerted effort here to find some new music because I know it's out there.
You kind of pushed yourself out of your own box.
So I was like, all right, I have a band called Super Corruptor, which I'm going to ring my own bell. I think is an awesome band name.
It's a great band.
Even if it doesn't fit the band. It's like, this could be a really cool, like, magazine, like Super Corruptor. You could read crap about it, like, mm-hmm. bands and stuff. I'm going to, like, hold myself accountable by reviewing the stuff that I like. And, like, that's the one thing. It's only, I only do stuff that I like. You know, I won't ever write a bad review because who's got time for that?
Yeah.
Right? And it was just like, okay, hey, I found this little record on Bandcamp that probably nobody knows exists. And I'm going to review it and I'm going to send that band an email with the link and they're going to feel like I'm cloud nine because somebody acknowledged their existence.
Right.
Because I felt that way. It's like, oh, somebody interviewed or reviewed the Deathcrawl record. They liked it. Wow.
Oh, right. Yeah.
This guy's in England. Cool. That's amazing.
That is fucking cool.
You know, and it's like, people don't realize that there's so many, oh, they do, but there's so many bands, there's so many albums every single week coming out.
Mm.
All of it gets lost.
Sure.
There's no way for anybody to find any of it. It's a giant pile of needles.
Yeah, you're just a teabag in the ocean.
And it was just like, okay, if I get this guy one record sale because I liked his record or her record,
cool.
Yeah, and trying to bring back the old, like, acknowledge you went to a show thing by reviewing the show.
Right.
You know, I can remember...
Nobody needs to review shows anymore because they have their phone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but who wants to watch that garbage on YouTube, right?
The people that recorded it and put it on YouTube...
They don't even watch it.
They're the only ones that watch it and shit. Like, remember, you want to see this video that I recorded? It's really good. Play.
Yeah.
And then their friend starts talking halfway through it because they're not interested, just like when you try to show somebody a song that you're interested. Same shit.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's all comes from a very selfish place for me, but I've discovered so many good bands. I've discovered that Australia is, like, where it's at for rock and roll right now.
Really?
So many good bands in Australia.
No shit.
Yeah. I'm going to jump on Australia.
They're the fucking filthy England.
Let's make this podcast for the next year just about Australia metal. Let's just see, like, where it goes. We got to broaden our horizons.
How about we make the rest of the year, we'll just do Australian.
That's it for the rest of the season. Maybe a half an episode.
Maybe we talk about Mad Max and then pivot to Australian bands.
But, maybe we never talk about Australia after today. After we get out of this car, never even say that fucking word.
But, I mean, yeah, there are some killer bands coming out of there. I never would have found any of them.
Yeah.
If I hadn't gone on this little quest to... not be so lazy.
I'm in the exact same boat. When 2016 is when we started this, and when Grant and I kind of like we didn't see each other that often for quite a few years, really. Like, it would be like a year gap at a time, or, like, you know, I'd have to go out to the outpost to go see him or something like that. Like, it was few and far between, and I was just dying to sit with this dude because every time we talked on the phone, when he called...
It was an hour.
It was, like, an hour-long conversation, and I would get off that phone being like, Jessica was like, all I heard was you laughing the whole fucking time. And I was just like,
because
I wish I could do that.
Because it was usually just me fucking bitching about something, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was, that's...
Grant's
mad about something.
And I have a long history of just egging you on. Where I'm just like, oh, if I say this, he's gonna lose his shit. Do it. Do it, Eagle, do it. And so I was just like, man, it's like the funnest conversations that I ever have. And I was just like, I wish we could record this. And we would always crack jokes, be like, man, this would be a good fucking radio show. This would be a podcast that I would listen to.
Yeah, and I kicked it around in my head for a while, wanting to do something like that just so I had some kind of fucking escape with my shit. You know what I mean? So I can get the shit that's in my head out of my head because it was driving me nuts. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, because I was so... like, just withdrawn from all my friends, and, like, I wasn't going to shows, and it was just life was kicking the shit out of me, and I needed a way out of it. And this kind of gave me the way out of it.
And since you worked at the Outpost,
mm-hmm.
like, that would be the thing that we would talk about when we first started podcasting. We were like, we're just going to talk about metal. Remember, the first badass band of the week that we ever attempted was going to be Clutch. Like, we were like, that it was going to be, like, that kind of area. It wasn't going to be – it ended up being Fully Consumed.
But like,
was that our first one?
Fully Consumed was our official first one. Okay. Clutch was like the one when I remember we did like a couple test podcasts. Like, we did some test runs. We had, sure. there's some episodes that have never been released. It was just him and I trying to get a feel for what the show could be.
Those are going to be put on vinyl eventually.
Eventually, I was thinking about like re-listening to episode one because it is now lost in the fucking ether.
Thank God,
nobody can find that. Like the first 22 episodes, nobody has them except for me. I have them, and I've considered for our anniversary, for the 4-year anniversary, putting out the very first episode, which opens with Grant being like, "Welcome to Keeping It 99, your podcast for yesteryear," and every like it was this whole like smooth little fucking thing, and the production on it was just me trying to figure out what the show is, because I'm like, I have
nobody
no fucking
clue.
Nobody
wants to hear it.
If you want to hear the very first episode of Keeping It 99, please
keep your mouth shut. Shut the fuck up. Keep your hand down. Sit on your hands. Shut the fuck up.
But Grant would come. He would come to me and like, you know, he would be like, this fucking asshole drummer at the, and I was just like, okay, and you know, record. Just be like,
go on. I had to throw this guy out, or this fucking band, or it was
the
always
the guy from Fuck You, Pay Me did this shit. He fucking.
So these motherfuckers wanted to light off some fucking firecrackers, and I was like, no way. Now they fucking hate me.
And I was like, oh, fuck, this is the show. I was like, this is it. And so he would talk about these bands, but he would talk so highly about so many people that were, you know, that were also musicians coming in and out of the outpost that, like, I was like, I need to fucking rekindle that because it was such a huge part of my life up to, like, 2004, 2005 mm-hmm. that, yeah, I mean – I was just like, I'm curious to see what the, like, who's still doing it? Because the thing with the vets, the guys like a Wally Howe or a Jeff Fall,
Bobby Clark,
the reason that they're still going is because they're that fucking good. Like, Wally and I had a discussion on a little texting back and forth recently where I was telling him that. I go, like, everybody that sucked in the early 2000s, they're done. They sold their drum kits. But everybody that was good, like, you guys all have look at Radiant. That's fucking four dudes from, like, multiple incredible bands. Like, all super talented fucking guys. I haven't even heard a lick from their shit, but I'm like, Radiant kills it. Like, I already know that they kill it. I haven't heard shit.
It's the first thing Burns has done in fucking forever.
And Mike Burns, a riff god, dude. That dude is a riff master.
Burns writes really good stuff.
I saw they were playing in Dayton with Goost. And we booked that show at Musica, and I got in touch with Burns. I was like, do you guys want to play Musica? And he said, as luck would have it, we do want to play Musica.
That's awesome.
Right around that time. So it all came together, and I'm pretty excited about that. I hope a lot of folks come out and check it out.
I'm coming out. I for sure will be at that show. Like, I'm not missing that show. I'm so fucking pumped to hear Burnsy again. You know, like, I mean, you already know what you're getting with Jeff Fall and shit, but I haven't got to hear Mike fucking jamming in a long time, so I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited, and man.
They just recorded at Dave's house.
He was Mike called me about a week and a half ago, and was telling me about it. And I think he wanted to break the news to me that he was in a band again, and I was like, "Sucker, already know,
bitch." That's out of the bag.
Jeff Fall already beat you to it. But yeah, it's like he's excited to play again. Mm-hmm. You can hear it. You know what I mean? Like, him talking and shit, because he needed to get away from it for a long time, and that's what he did. And hated it. I fucking hated it. I'm glad he's back. It's going to be it's going to be good.
Yeah, between all, like, seeing the vets from when I remember going to shows and seeing a lot of the newer, younger bands and stuff, because there are a lot of great fucking younger bands.
Featherweight.
And that's some of the coolest shit to see. Yeah, Featherweight.
The band Featherweight that's out right now. They just put out an EP, I think. And it's there's some clean singing in there, you know what I mean? It's a little bit more poppy, but it is heavy, man. And all of those fucking dudes, solid fucking musicians. And I've watched all of them come up since they were like 15 years old. You know what I mean? I was there when they all played like their first shows and shit. And if you want to talk about a new band, Featherweight, check those dudes out.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. That's what I need. Like, I don't know anybody young. I'm 40. All of my people are 40 or late 30s, you know? Like, I don't know what anybody in their 20s is doing, you know? And it's like,
we got your back.
I know they're out there ripping somewhere.
The only reason I know anybody is because of my time at the Post. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If I didn't keep on working in a club, I'd be just as fucking clueless at 40, you know, 42 today.
Yeah, and I'm ever since we started doing the podcast, I mean, I'm at Annabelle's all the fucking time now. Like, all the fucking time. Like, I will go after work just to go downstairs in the basement and see who the fuck is playing.
Right.
And, like, yeah, so it's, like, really, like, the same as you. Since 2016, like, I've just been back in it, and I'm like, holy shit. Like, people will tell me, they're like, oh, the scene sucks so much now. Like, it doesn't really suck. There's just less people going, it feels like. But I'm like, the bands are, like, actually, bands like, better. And the young bands are so wonderful because they had guys like NDE as a template. Like, that was their fucking starting point, you know? And, like, that's the thing I always think about. I'm like, they started off with great metal. Like, what was the first riff you ever learned? Oh, this thing from Meshuggah. I'm like, fuck you. Do you know how long it took for me to even understand the time fucking signatures in a Meshuggah song?
To fucking spell Meshuggah?
Like, I started off with fucking, like, you know, Metallica, like, for whom the bell tolls. It's like, okay, yeah, like, play that shit on the fucking drums, you know? But, like, now people are just like, no, I'm starting off with fucking Bleed.
Yeah, right, you're 15 and you play a fucking 8-string?
Yeah.
Cool.
And so there's something in the water in Northeast Ohio, man. Like,
no, it's just evolution. And that's exactly what you were just saying, is that they got to grow up with this. And it's been like that since the fucking beginning, dude. Since whoever fucking started tapping on a piece of wood 7,000 years ago.
Right.
You know, then their kid was like, oh, I can tap better than that. And then that kid was like, I can tap better than that. It's just evolution. Like, the music gets better and these kids grow up. And that's all that they know is the fucking, this is the level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's what they learn at. They learn at that level as to where it was lower levels in the years prior. It's just evolution. These kids are fucking doing exactly what they should be doing.
Yep. My brother will complain, not complain. He'll be like, how come nobody wants to listen to whatever band? And I'll say, because they don't relate to that band. You grew up listening to that band.
Yeah,
right.
They grew up listening to bands that grew up listening to that band.
Right.
Yep.
You know, they don't necessarily care about the roots yet. You know?
Yeah.
They'll get there.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But for now, what they know is what they know, and your shit sucks.
Yep.
They'll figure it out eventually.
Yep.
All right, before we go, I got to give a little shout out to the Record Exchange up in Fairlawn. Fuck you guys for tricking me into buying this CD today. I it was $3. They had a sticker on it, right?
Uh-huh.
Here you can see it says Volume 1. I thought I was purchasing for $3. Black Sabbath's We Sold Our Souls for Rock and Roll, the greatest hits fucking album. What a great fucking record from Black Sabbath.
They hit you with Volume 1.
For $3. And so I was like, oh shit, that's what I'm going to put in the car on the way up to go interview Jason. And I'm going to get in a Black Sabbath-y mood. Fucking buy this shit for $3. He takes the sticker off. I see Volume 1. There's 7 songs on this fucking CD. That's no good. And one of them is fucking Wicked World. I don't give a shit about Wicked World, dude. Like, I mean, seriously.
Right.
Seriously, fuck you guys. Fuck you guys. The Record Exchange. You guys don't even have Dying Fetus. I was looking for Dying Fetus. You have a small metal section. You guys don't know shit. And I was like, you guys have Dying Fetus? The dude goes, I don't know what that is. I was like, fuck me. Fuck you, Record Exchange.
See, if you would have went to the Record Exchange in Kent,
yeah.
The dude that works there was literally just talking about how his band sounds like Dying Fetus and Obituary. And I was like, fuck
if you
yeah!
If you go to the Record Exchange, go to the Record Exchange in Kent. So I was looking for I was looking for like a cool shirt to buy Grant for his birthday. I ended up going to Hot Topic of all fucking places.
Oh, I got a Hot Topic shirt?
You got a Hot Topic shirt. It's a wrong size. Well,
I have to lose weight.
There's your fucking shirt.
But the irony is, it's a volume change. Yeah,
that's fucking. Oh, this is like a large skinny. I'll still work it out. Either way, look at this thing.
Nice.
Ah, Maiden.
Yeah. Got you an Iron Maiden shirt. Happy birthday.
Thank you, dude.
Nice. Love you.
Thank you. I love you. I love Eddie.
So, yeah, if you go to the Record Exchange, Kent.
Eddie and Maiden have been a part of my life since, like, I can remember. Literally, my brothers are 9 and 10 years older than me, and my brother Grady, his favorite band above and beyond all bands was fucking Maiden, and his whole room was fucking plastered in Maiden posters, and Harris's fucking 3-finger gallop, that's my brother's fucking move. Like, my brother was really good at fucking playing bass back in the day, and then he had kids and started drinking a lot, so now he's just a fucking pile of shit. But he could have been somebody. Stop getting people pregnant. But yeah, so, you know, like, I grew up like, it was just fucking, he would go to the shows and then come home and, you know, tell his little baby brother about these fucking shows. And I, yeah. you know, it was magical to me that there was like this fucking 13-foot monster on stage shooting lasers across the arena and yeah. all this other shit. So,
and then you, the picture in your mind's eye is so much different than oh, what yeah. was actual. Yeah. It was awesome.
Especially like when you're like 5 and 6 years uh-huh. old and you're having this, because your imagination is, you know, like I imagine like Timmy.
Right.
You know
oh, yeah.
what I mean? Because his imagination is fucking crazy and shit. So, you know, me, same thing when I was a kid. Like, it was just fucking magical. And, you know, ended up, I've told the story before about, like, how Grady got to see Maiden all these times, and I would always have to hear about it. And then fast forward to, it was like 1999, 2000, and I got to work security for them. They played up at Nautica. And my back is against the stage, dude. And Dickinson is fucking 2 feet to my right singing. And Harris is 2 feet to my left playing. And I was like, fuck all 20 times you've seen these motherfuckers. Because you ain't seeing them like this. And it was like, it was one of the best times of my life. You know, and so a lot of good times in my life comes down to Iron Maiden and Eddie. Right, so thank you. I love you.
Love you. Happy birthday, my man. Thank you so much, Jason, for doing this. So
it's
much.
Seeing you, dude. I yes. totally forgot about the whole fucking Ginger Dead Man thing, which is crazy. Like, you said that, and I was like, what?
Yeah, it's great being in forgettable rock bands.
Yeah.
Well, I miss let's Nate. Be honest, that's all of them.
I miss
really?
Nate, so when you see Nate, tell him I said, hey, I'm
I will
him.
Do. I will do.
Last time I seen him, it was on the side of a road. I was making a delivery, and he was down
yeah.
BFE somewhere, crossing the street to get in his truck or whatever.
Yep.
And, like, he was walking so fucking cool and, like, arrogant. Like, I'm, hey, look at me. I'm fucking Nate, man. People like me, man. But that's the last time I seen him. So, yeah, tell him I said, hey.
I will.
So November 16th. If you're in Streetsboro, go check out the V-Rock documentary. And then, no, it doesn't matter where you are. If you're Akron, you're in Streetsboro, you're in Cleveland. If you're in Canada, you're the one guy that listens in Canada.
We're all hauling it to Akron.
You get to the Musica. You go see Super Corruptor. Go see Radiant. And who else is playing?
Nodge.
You can't really get a better Jesus. Night, man. Like it, look, if you were into fucking V-Rock back in the day, go see the fucking movie. Like, we're all going to fucking be there. And then to drive 20 minutes... To do exactly what we've been talking about the whole fucking time. The thing that V-Rock brought us was together and shows and fucking music. So why not go from the fucking V-Rock movie to this awesome fucking show 20 minutes down the road at fucking Musica? It's a great club, by the way.
Great club.
Great club. Yeah, go see Super Corruptor, Radiant, and Nodge. I mean, it's going to be fucking
Nodge, awesome. I've never even heard, so.
Yeah, they're new. They're good.
Yeah.
Heavy stuff.
Awesome.
You guys like new stuff? You like heavy stuff? Nodge, get on it.
Yep.
Thank you so much again, man.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Man, it was awesome. Until next time, my name is Eagle.
I'm Rubber City Redbeard.
I'm Jason.
Jason Luchka.
Bye.
has been a Lousy Weather Media Network production. Find new episodes and archives at lousyweathermedia.com.